town music. This is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis. We're trying something new today, recording through Zoom. So we've got a Zoom guest. I see him. He sees me. I'm going to let him introduce himself to you right now. He's been on the show before, but never in this capacity. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome.
My name is Alexi Lawless, and I am privileged and honored and pleased to be back yet again with you, Pat, on this show. I hear that opening music and, you know, It warms the cockles of my redheaded heart. So I'm so happy to be here. I know this isn't the ideal way, but this is better than nothing now. At least I see you from a Zoom perspective.
Yes,
and so
true.
We are kind of sitting across from each other.
We are. And you didn't have to drive to the Valley.
That's true.
Which Fee Wable would love that. He might be willing to do this every day. So Alexi, you normally you're on TV. And you're very well groomed because you're presenting your face to the public, and you have to look You have to look like a professional. But during the Corona lockdown, a little bit different.
Yes. So we're recording this the end of May-ish, mm-hmm. and we're starting to kind of come out a little bit, but I am still in my. Let's say find a cabin in the woods, write a manifesto about the evils of technology and society type of appearance and aesthetic. And I haven't had a beard this big or any facial hair this big since back in the heyday in the 90s with the long goatee when I was running around on soccer fields. So for me, this is actually I'm growing hair in places. I don't know about you, but I never ever thought I could grow hair, and certainly that I don't want to grow hair, but you know, the cleaning up will happen at some point, just not yet.
Absolutely. And you can't, when you're a professional broadcaster and you're on TV, it always looks sloppy if you start to grow a beard in the middle of that job. Now, if you wanted to, you could shave that down to a nice groomed level. And then you could start your job with a beard when you go back, if you wanted to. Will you do that?
I can definitely do it. I think I'm going to do something. I am enjoying it too much to just completely go back to clean shaven and, you know, high and tight when it comes to the hair. So maybe this version of me that existed back in the 1900s, back in the previous century, a little version of it is coming out right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it possible that the 90s goatee comes back?
I think, you know, I'm turning 50, Pat, here in a week from our day of record. And so it's a milestone as for anybody that does that. And so maybe I'll do a little homage to the past. And for that day, I'll shave in the goatee, which I haven't had since 1999. So it's been 20 years.
Well,
so, 2000. So it has been 20 years.
Obviously, pictures need to be taken and posted if that happens. Right.
I don't know. Say again.
I said, obviously, pictures need to be taken and posted if that happens.
Yes. And they will. I mean, in this day and age where everything is very, very important and everybody is so interested in everything, including my facial hair, whatever phase it may be. So I will make sure that the public is sated and given, you know, all of me that they can possibly handle.
Now, how does your wife enjoy that you're growing the beard again? Does she like it?
She is okay with it, although she, like you said, I think she looks at it as if you're going to do it with some panache and do it with some style. And so I think she wants it to be much less Grizzly Adams.
Right.
You know, what's the one with Leonardo, the Reverend or Revenant?
The Revenant.
Yeah, whatever that one is, much less so that type of unruly and unkempt look as opposed to, you know, a much more styled look. So I think she'd be okay with the beard as long as I went back. And I haven't. The only concession I've made is kind of I trimmed my neck hair.
But you're right.
It was a small little thing. So she's tolerating it right now, given the interesting times we're living in.
Now, are you surprised at the, and I'm not saying anything out of turn because you go live on Twitter a lot, so people have seen you in this manner. Are you surprised at the amount of gray that you actually have in your beard currently?
I'm not surprised. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is kind of normal for what happens. I think others are surprised, and it is a little jarring and jolting for anybody that maybe hasn't seen me for a while. But, you know, I like to look at it as distinguished, regardless of what anybody else says. So that's what I'm going with.
I mean, yeah, I have like my kids last night, and I just have a little bit of scruff going, and they're like, "Dad, you need to shave because there's it's so much gray in my beard." And they just said it makes you look old, so you just need to shave.
It is amazing how, you know, in this time of crisis and challenge, how much hair talk there is, and
there's
salon,
tons of hair talk. Yeah,
and you know, my wife, I love my wife, and so you know, the grays come out because she's not, you know, getting it colored and
doing her thing.
And I tell her, I think it's awesome. I love it, but it doesn't have the desired effect. I'm hoping that is like the best possible thing to say.
Yeah.
And yet it doesn't land the way that I wanted it to land.
Pilar cannot wait to get her hair done like she normally does.
Right. Yeah.
And I think it looks great. I'm like, I think you look good.
Exactly. And either they don't believe you or they just don't want to believe you.
Yeah. Or they just want it how they want it.
Right, they had we really have no say anyway.
how are your kids doing with the quarantine and everything?
Look, we are muddling through like everybody else here in Los Angeles. Like you, we are trying to figure it out. We have had the, you know, for a number of months now, the online schooling, which has gone relatively well. I'm interested to see if there are things that come out of this, in that, you know, are there moments where, because of the online schooling, there's much more emphasis and much more concentration than in normal times.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to happen. And I'm not saying that this is the new normal, but you know, we're trying to stay off each other's backs and not irritate each other too much. That's going well at times. We all have our moments, and we recognize we can all have our moments, but you know, we're doing the things to keep ourselves and others safe. And hopefully, like I said, we're coming around and coming out of some of it, but we still got a long way to go, as we know. And these are unprecedented times. I tell them all the time, look, I can't tell you how to feel or how to function, because I've never been through this either. But
right, exactly.
They're going to have a hell of a story to tell their kids when their kids are whining and screaming. That whole walk to school in the snow has kind of been blown out of the the window there. So
a friend of mine made a joke. He said, our kids would tell the joke, when I was your age, I had to walk to school up and down the stair, up the stairs both ways.
Exactly.
Kind of messed that up a little bit, but
they're being troopers though. So I got to take my hat.
We don't have the kids here. They're being great. Ezra just finished up sophomore year of college from home. Rita has two more weeks of sophomore year in high school, but they don't have a curfew. They're staying up crazy late and sleeping in crazy late. It's 1:15 p.m. in the afternoon right now. And Rita, she got up and did her online class, her Zoom class, and she's asleep right now, back to bed.
Yeah, there is no schedule.
There's no schedule. I mean, and there's no need to be. Yeah. As long as they're being good and are thriving, I don't care what they're doing.
And, you know, I have a 14 or going to be 15 year old mm-hmm. Girl and a going to be 12 year old boy. And when it comes to the video game thing, which we guard against so much normal times, now it is not only encouraged, but it is oftentimes their form of communication. And it is their, you know, we went to play dates, but it is kind of a play date where they hang out with their friends and buddies. I hear everything because it's happening in the house, and it's funny to hear them all kind of talk their 13-year-old and 12-year-old version of Smack, whatever that is. But it's all through Fortnite and gaming and stuff. And you have to kind of let them have that and encourage it. So the rules that applied a few months ago don't apply anymore. And who knows what it will return to or what it won't return to going forward.
And I forget, the last time we were together in person, did your kids have phones or they didn't have phones?
My daughter had just gotten her phone.
Okay.
She was one of the last.
Yes, that's what I remember. Holdout. Okay.
Yeah. So, and she's made up for lost time.
Oh yeah. She's FaceTiming with her friends all the time. Probably. Yeah.
There was a big thing where we then had to decide whether she got any type of social media. And we finally agreed to let her have Instagram as long as I could follow her.
Yes.
So she recognized that, look, anything that you post out there, recognize that your father is going to see it. So you better pick and choose wisely. The only thing that I have threatened is to get on, and you mentioned, you know, I'm active on Twitter, and that's the one that I do the most, because I don't understand how to work a lot of the other ones.
Yeah, yeah.
But I have threatened her to get on TikTok, and there is nothing better than seeing her face when I do threaten, and the mortified look that comes over as
same here, same in our house when I threaten to get on TikTok.
I keep that around. Yep. So, but yeah. I haven't done it yet. So she's definitely on TikTok and doing all that kind of stuff.
That's cool. And your son now, he doesn't have a phone yet. So how is he communicating with his friends through the video game?
So they play through the video game and they all have their headsets and they're all, you know, it's really amazing virtual world, I guess. But there's also a communication that goes on. So they're interacting, and that social interaction, I think, is important because it gets lost from a face-to-face and human contact. And so this is the best that we can do. Like, we're doing Zoom here. Mm-hmm. You know, he does Zoom calls. He does texting with people and FaceTiming with people that in normal days, I don't think he would be doing it, and certainly wouldn't be doing it to this extent.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's really been fun to see how that type of communication has become so important, and you have to encourage it and say, hey, this is good because this is the best we have for now.
Yep. I mean, if this had happened when I was 15 or you were 15, we would be killing each other at the house because there would be what would the outlet be? You know what I mean? I mean, because even, you know, when I was 15, there wasn't Netflix and all the stuff you can watch. There was outdoors and playing and stuff like that. So if you were confined to your house, you would go insane.
Oh, my God. It would be nuts. I mean, look, we were already moving away from the fact that when we grew up, it was kick us out of the house and you got to come back by dinner. And
right. Exactly.
Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
And we moved on to the play dates and you don't put people out of the house. But like you said, I mean, I can't even fathom what we would have done. I mean, we would have made it work and figured it out. But, you know, the amount of horrible movies that I have watched, wonderful, you know, series, wonderful documentaries, all that kind of stuff. I'm getting to the bottom of the barrel when it comes to Netflix, though. I find myself clicking through and going over and over and over, trying to find something that it's like, at least will get me through a couple hours.
Yeah, sometimes you just spend a half hour going through the menu and then not choosing anything.
Exactly. Exactly. And you feel like you've failed. Although, I mean, I tell you what, I guess I knew this, and back in the day we would call it going straight to video, but there are just incredible libraries of movies that mainstream actors have done. I mean, like the Sylvester Stallone, but the Arnold Schwarzenegger catalog of movies that I watched a Al Pacino movie last night that I never heard of before. It was horrible. Don't get me wrong. It was horrible, but I'm sure he got paid a lot of money. But, you know, you're in desperate situations. You know, you act desperately.
Well, I'm not going to say, I won't say the company. I won't say my brother-in-law's name. I won't say any of this stuff, but I would tell you my brother-in-law works for a motion picture company. Is that how you say it? In the 20s, maybe. And they hired Sylvester Stallone to be in one of those movies. He got $4.5 million for one day. For one day.
Wow.
And then they put him on the poster, they put him on the box, they put him on everything because, you know, and then I guess they're just filming, like, I guess it's like one or two takes and they're just like moving him from set piece to set piece and getting as much out of him in that one day as possible. But I mean, who wouldn't take that gig one day, $4.5 million?
And it's probably from a financial perspective, there is a formula probably where that does work. So you say, oh, that's crazy for one day, but the promotion that they get and the amount of people that will ultimately click on it and buy it or go and see it is such that you will make that back up. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it.
Well, the money comes from overseas. I mean, here we'll see it on Redbox or it'll eventually be on Netflix or whatever. And you'll say, what the hell is this? But I guess then they market it on the big screen in, you know, China and Japan, and people love Sylvester Stallone. They still love all those actors. So that's where they make the money back, like, immediately. So it's amazing.
The other interesting thing, and I don't know if you've seen this with your podcast, but you think that now that people have more time, that they have more time to listen to podcasts. Mm-hmm. And what we've obviously found is that as the routine has been broken, that it is in that normal.
Yeah.
It's actually not the case. So, you know, to your listeners, I guess, you know, thank you for continuing to tune in for all the podcasts out there. Did you, have you listened to Wind of Change podcast?
No, tell me about
that. Oh, my goodness. All right, so there's this new podcast out there, Scorpions, who you know.
Okay, yes, right, yes.
It's a band. One of their major hits over the years was Wind of Change. And it's this incredible deep dive into the conspiracy theory and the propaganda behind that, in that there were rumors that that was actually a song written by the intelligence community of the United States and the CIA.
Wow. Wow.
As a form of propaganda. That, and it goes all back into this incredible backstory of the Moscow Musical Fest, mm-hmm. Music Festival, a piece of music festival, and Doc McGee and all those bands. And that was where he ended up, where Klaus Meine ended up writing the song. And by the way, Klaus Meine was not the musical writer for the Scorpions. And this was just out of nowhere it came. So it's, you know, it's all this conspiracy theory, but it is a fascinating type of story.
And how many episodes could there be of this?
Oh my God, it's 10 episodes.
It's like a 10 episode mini series.
Yes.
All right.
I do recommend it. It is fun.
I will check it out.
I believe it all, but it was fun.
I will check it out. Okay. So what we're doing today, and again, this is my first real, attempt at, recording through Zoom with a guest that's, not in studio with me. And it's killing me because this isn't how I do the show.
Right.
And I never have, and I never want to do it again like this afterward, but
should
if I have to,
today? Is that it?
No. We're going to do it. We're going to do it. But, and I appreciate you, what do I want to say? Not volunteering, but agreeing to do it like this.
Yes.
And so I came up with a simple topic for us. We're going to do track by track, for Rick Springfield's Success Hasn't Spoiled Me Yet. I don't know what number album this is for Rick, but for me, I personally always just think of it as his second album, because I really feel like Working Class Dog is when he really cemented himself as a recording artist. So even though Working Class isn't his first album, in my head, I always think that it is, you know what I mean?
And certainly for us growing up in the 70s and 80s and in the United States, that's when he came on the radar from a musical perspective.
Yeah, so I think
that's fair.
Yeah, I didn't know.
I'm sure there's people out there
albums.
That are going to whine and scream and yell, yeah, but this and
yeah,
that.
But Wait for Night and, you know, all that other stuff. And I own that stuff. But really, this is where it starts for me, Working Class Dog. So let me ask you something. What, and you've probably told me this before, but for the sake of this show today,
sure.
What is your favorite Rick Springfield solo album?
My favorite Rick Springfield solo album is, all right. So I went through this. And so, you know, my catalog would go from Working Class to Success to Living in Oz. You know, the whole Hard to Hold thing, I don't know if we count that as an album, because
not
it's a
really
soundtrack,
but Love Somebody is a killer.
Love Somebody is a great, I mean, it's just
so
it's
great.
Just a great song. So you kind of have to, you know, include it. You know, and then I would think that I'm still partial to the first one. Although I love Rock of Life, and I know it's not liked by a lot of people.
Yeah, I like that one too.
I really, really love it. It's got some beautiful writing and beautiful songs, but I think I was too, when Success came out, I was 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still a little bit young to fully appreciate it. Living in Oz really, really hit me. Mm-hmm. And so then I also went back and appreciated it even more because I was a couple years older. So if I had to say, I'm still probably going to go with Living in Oz.
All right, cool. And Success Hasn't Spoiled Me Yet is my favorite one. And when this came out in 1982, I was 18. Yeah, I was 18. So when you buy this album and you're in college, it doesn't go over well. You know what I mean? As an 18 year old, when I picked up this album and it's got, you know, some poodles and a dog in a purple and pink clothing and in the back of a limo, and it's Rick Springfield. It wasn't. Guys were like, what the hell? And I'm like, I love it. That's how I always was. I was just like,
well, say it loud and proud.
Yeah, I always did. I was like, I love it. I don't care. You don't have to listen to it.
Well, this is the problem. It's not a problem. I guess this is the challenge of Rick Springfield.
Right.
As we know, it was his looks and the acting part of it and mm-hmm. all that. And obviously the incredible female audience that he had.
Yeah.
That turned off people, that tended to downplay his musicianship and his writing ability and all of that. And so you had to kind of, be separate as a, especially as a male.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Rick Springfield fan in that, and I didn't care what he looked like. He looked cool. I mean,
yeah, he looked cool.
Don't get me wrong. He looked very, very cool.
Yeah. You don't want to look, the guys that are making fun of it, they don't want to look like that. They do.
Right.
They want to look like that. They just want to admit
it. I was so much more interested and fascinated by how good the songs were.
Yes.
And that whole thing about, you know, actors that want to be musicians and others, that even from a young age fascinated me to how you kind of cross over and do all that thing. Because some people were listening to it as, oh, this is the actor making music. And I was able to just look at it and said, this is just great music. Mm-hmm. It just happens to be an actor that's actually doing it. And I loved it. I loved it from the start. I loved the production of it, the great players on it, who at the time I didn't realize who they were. And
right.
I also didn't realize the incestuous type of relationship between, you know, whether it was Rick Springfield and Pat Benatar and those types
of
groups. And all those groups that kind of everybody slept with everybody.
Yeah, just the crossover with production and writing and all that stuff.
But it was sugar. It was that production sugar and that sugar of that time that I just wanted and I couldn't get enough of.
Yeah, I mean, the same people that would be listening to the 1975 self-titled Fleetwood Mac album would frown at this album, and they're produced by the same guy, Keith Olsen. So, I mean, you know. It's funny about that you say about actors and singers wanting to act and actors wanting to sing, because now in 2020, it's kind of not a thing. If Lady Gaga wants to be in a movie, you're like, cool. And you know, if, you know, Alicia Keys wants to act, no one cares. Now it's not like a thing. You can do anything you want to do.
Yeah. What an entertainer is kind of broadened out.
Exactly.
I still think there's a stigma when it comes to athletes, but I digress. Athletes who want to do music, but you know, that's part of the deal. But you're right. I think it is much more accepted to be able to do all things. And we've seen so many, and J-Lo and Timberlake and all these.
Absolutely.
And you still have to be good. And you still have to be good.
Yeah. You can't walk through it. You can't, you know, you have to be good at it. You're right. Now let me ask you this. Are you, do you have any songwriting inspiration as you're under lockdown for 2 months?
I do. I am sitting in front of a Pro Tools session right now. I continue to write and to record and do the music for all three people, including my mother, and we'll continue to put that stuff out. And there will
for all three people.
It will be a long line of crap that comes out from the quarantine and the lockdown. I will add my crap to it. Some of it actually may be good. Not talking about myself, but the stuff that I have. But yeah, you know, listen, this is something that I do. It's something that I love to do. And with all of this time and this downtime, obviously it lends itself to being creative and doing things and forcing yourself at times to, you know, try different things.
I hope the creative forces in television and movies, I hope that in another year and a half that every season premiere of every TV show isn't a lockdown episode. You know what I mean? Or how many quarantine movies are we going to get? I mean, I just hope that they can, you know, get by that and do something even more original.
Exactly. I think you kind of have to, you have to go against that.
You do,
really separate yourself at this time, because there's going to be so much of it. And
there is definitely going to be a lot of it. And I do predict that when Curb Your Enthusiasm comes back, probably the first episode will be Larry in a mask, walking around and just enjoying being alone. That's what I feel.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're going to have to do something. So, you know, I work in the sports industry, and obviously we don't have live sports right now.
No.
But one of the things that I'm thinking about is when we start to talk about sports and when we start to go back to some sort of normal in sports, you know, how long does it last where everybody's kind of with the soft approach? And, you know, these are different times and we've just gone through an incredible challenge. And how much leeway do you give the players before you get back to slamming them and criticizing them,
exactly,
and calling them out on all that kind of stuff? Because that's the normal. That's getting back to normal, is where you're not taking into account what we've just been through. But we're all human, and if and when this ends, and when this ends, it will certainly have an impact.
Please don't say if.
No, when.
All right, let's get into this album, Alexi. Let's kick it off with track one from Success Hasn't Spoiled Me Yet. This is something called Calling All Girls.
She was young, but she was vicious. She took a bite.
right. Calling All Girls. Excellent way to kick off an album, for sure. I love it.
I disagree.
So, I guess I should preface this by saying we live in an age where sequence of songs isn't really that important anymore.
Right.
But when we were listening to this, and for a great period of time, it was important because
yes.
that's how you listen to it. I don't like, it's not that I don't like this song. Actually, I do like this song. It's
okay.
really cool parts of it. But to kick off an album, and in particular, because I always find that Rick Springfield has wonderful verses, I find this verse completely plodding and unmelodic, very un-Rick.
Here we go.
Oh, that's what bothers me.
All right.
Okay? In that I expect Rick to do better, especially if you're going to lead off the album with it, because there are time and time again I hear Rick Springfield songs, and I am not only taken with the song as a whole, but all the parts of it fit together and in and of themselves are beautiful. And this one, to come out right out of the chute with one that doesn't have that verse that really grabs me, and not only grabs me, but it actually... repulsed is a bad word, but
okay.
But that's my problem with this song.
Okay,
sequencing too, I think.
When we get to the song that you feel should open the album, you'll let us know.
Okay, great.
Did you ever resequence an album, or did nerds do that? They take an album that they don't like the sequence and they resequence it in their. You can do that in your iTunes.
Yeah, I mean, we were doing it back in the day with mixtapes to a certain extent.
True. There's
some albums that I will hear where I know that on the cassette that I wore out, it was a different order of songs. And usually it's a mixtape, not an actual full album where
right.
you're mixing and matching like you could do now. But it is an art, or it was an art at a time, because there was an arc of an album, and obviously... Even nowadays, you're supposed to put your best song at the top, even when people are streaming, because
that's
the one they're always going to click
right.
on first.
Exactly.
So you better lead it off with something special. And I just think that this wasn't special enough to lead off this album.
Okay, so can I assume that the past three albums you've released, you feel that the first song on all those albums is the best one on the album?
I feel it's the best one to bring somebody
into the album. Okay.
Yeah.
Good call.
Bring somebody into the album. So, yes.
So, again, to rehash, I said, what a great way to kick off an album. And Alexi, you said, not.
This is not a great way to kick off an album.
Okay.
Okay. And it's not even, I mean, the girls part of it, I mean, look, we understand what Rick Springfield was.
Right.
And he was, in a certain way, playing to his base here
right.
and being very, very direct. And this is what it is. But I mean, the verse is just what takes me out of it. And it bums me out because I want to come on with gangbusters right
yeah.
from the start for a Rick Springfield album.
All right.
So that's my problem. So we're, you know, this is part of it, right? This is all subjective. This is all opinion, right?
So it sounds like you don't like this song at all, though.
No, I love the chorus.
Okay.
And I love, the breakdown the backup vocals on this, and there's a bunch of people that sang on this.
Yeah, Tom Kelly,
people that wrote,
Tommy
people that played
Funderbunk,
on
it. I think is his name.
Just wonderful backups,
yeah.
And you know his bridges are incredible at times. And so this one where it's the calling.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a later on in the song. I love that part, that whole ethereal type of part. And once again, it says if that part of the song is so good, if the verses had just been explored, or in my case, the way I would look at it is as improved in a certain way, it would have been a much better opening type of song.
All right. So like the song, but not in slot number one.
Right. Exactly.
All right. Cool. All right, let's move on to track two. And again, if you're just tuning in, that's not possible that you could just be tuning in. But we're doing a track by track of Rick Springfield's Success Hasn't Spoiled Me Yet from 1982. Here we go. Track two, coming up. Love the guitar at the beginning.
Well, you admit you like a game, but you're not gonna play. You just ignore what your body is trying to say. I got the feeling that you're playing and we're both gonna win. And I think this angel's about to sin. I get excited just thinking what you might be like. I get excited, there's heaven in your eyes tonight. The fire's ignited,
right. We stopped it right before he sings about you getting nervous when you bite your lip. I'll let you go first on this one then. That way, okay. every time I talk positive, you won't take me out at the knees.
Well, I'm gonna talk positive about this. This should have kicked off the album.
All right.
2 minutes and 32 seconds of just pure gold. The knock on this one for some people would be that it is a knockoff of Jesse's Girl. But
yeah.
Look, if you are going to steal and cop from somebody, better yourself first and foremost. Secondly, if you're going to steal from somebody, steal from one of your own songs that was really, really good and obviously resonated. So I have no problem with that. As a matter of fact, I think it's very, very, I think it's actually difficult to write a companion piece or write another version of a song that has been successful and still have it stand on its own, which I think this does. I would love for this to have kicked off the album. You know, from a nitpicky type of thing, the pop of the mic at the very beginning of the song on the word play drives me nuts. And that Keith Olsen left it in or cared or didn't care about it is something that, you know, rock and peace. But I would love to have asked him as to why that was appropriate to do, even with the technology that they were using back then. But it also makes it very human.
Yeah,
and very much of a rock song. So I love this. I love this song. It's also one of those rare songs where the name, the title of the song isn't the actual chorus. It's just
right. That's true. That's true.
Part of that pre-chorus. So, and that's always interesting to me when somebody decides to do something like that. And the keyboards that come in the second verse, I was talking about the verses, are just wonderful. This is much better overall, and the verses are wonderful. I love them.
And again, to get all this gorgeousness in 2 minutes and 35 seconds is incredible. He didn't even use the full 3 minutes.
I love it. Exactly. Don't bore us, get to the chorus, all that kind of stuff. It's just a perfect little pop gem, and it hits all of the bases that at least I want from my Rick Springfield.
All right. And now the next one is one of the singles. I don't know if it was the first single. Was it? Let me look. I gotta look at the thing. No, I don't think it was the first single, but it was one of the singles. This is What Kind of Fool Am I? Of course, we took that one right from the top because it comes right in with Rick singing. And let me hear your thoughts on this one.
So you want me to start on this one? Okay.
I can start.
Well, I thought we were going back and forth. It's up to you.
We'll go back and forth. I'm nervous now.
Don't be nervous.
Well, here's the thing. You actually are a musician. You actually write and sing. And I don't do that. So you're coming from a place maybe of more knowledge than me.
No,
I can only tell you.
Not true.
I can only tell you what I enjoy.
That's all. No, your assessment of it is as valid as anybody, regardless of their proficiency when it comes to musicianship or anything like that. I don't buy that. And
all right.
I will respect it even if I don't agree with it.
And this is tough too, because this is my favorite Rick Springfield album. So, you know, that means I do like all the songs. So I really do like this song a lot. I love the it's not quite a ballad because it kicks in a little later on, but I love him singing right from the jump. And this one's honey for me.
It is honey. I like the song, but I'm forcing myself to say I like. So so whatever the notch below like is in your vocabulary, use that, insert that here. I was reminded while I was listening to this, and you know, I've heard this hundreds of times, and I don't want anybody to think that I don't like this album. I love this album, and I will listen to this from start to finish.
Yeah.
No problem. So the what I kept thinking of was, we know that Rick Springfield obviously comes from Australia, and I couldn't help thinking about how this sounded like a Gibb, in the Brothers Gibb type
right.
of production from the start. You know, it had that whole "Our Love, Don't Throw It All Away" type of song, and that sweet keyboard in it, or Olivia Newton-John type of mm-hmm. stuff. And when Rick does that type of stuff, it goes back to a much more teeny bopper type of feel, and it can take me out. But like you said, the chorus of this kind of brings you back.
Yeah.
And because it's a much more hard rocking chorus, I actually like the contrast between the verses and that syrupy type in the verses with the much more hard rock type of song that that appears. So
yeah, and I like the part, we didn't get to it in the clip I play, but when he says, "I never meant to say how is it? Didn't say goodbye. Maybe we could work it out, but I never meant to say goodbye." And then it just boom kicks back into what
and
kind of form.
And again, the backing vocals are just they're soaring and they're glorious and they're wonderful to be able to sing along. Because all of these songs, you know, you can put it in the car, put the windows down, drive fast, and sing along and
yeah.
mesh in with all those voices that are happening.
Now, the first three tracks that we've played so far, those were all written by Rick Springfield on his own.
Yep.
And the next one coming up, I'm reading that it was co-written with Rick Springfield and Jim Vallance.
But that is a little misleading.
It's a little misleading. And Alexi turned me on to something about this song this week that I am floored by what you told me about this song. So I guess we'll play track four. We'll play Christina first. And then we're going to get into what you informed me about that I have no idea how I never knew about this. And okay. I'm being very vague. I'm being very cryptic. But, and man, this before we even play it, this is one of my favorites on the album. I love it so much. So here we go, Christina. Opening riff, terrific. Drums come in, I love it. Fading it down right there after hearing the chorus. And now we got some, well, let's talk about this and then we'll unpack some of the stuff that I was informed of just a day ago. So what's your take on Christina?
Best song on the album.
Okay.
I said earlier that I would have been cool if I Get Excited was the opener,
mm-hmm.
but thinking more about it, I would much rather Christina be the opener. With the only caveat that what we're about to talk about here kind of
taints it.
It does taint it. It does taint it. Look, it is a great song. And I guess we should get into what the situation is. So I didn't know about this either until a while ago. So that this is, I don't know what you call it. It's a cover. In that it was written and done before, but it was written and done before by a group, and it was called something completely different with completely different lyrics. So what Rick Springfield and Jim Vallance did was take the song and just change the lyrics So much so that they almost followed the exact pattern of the original when it came to singing. And they made it a lot more rocking. I think they made it their own in that sense. I mean, they wrote new lyrics for it.
But they didn't give credit to the original artist either.
So when you look at the writers on this, like you said, it's Rick Springfield and Jim Balance. This was actually a song that was written and performed by BTO, Bachman Turner Overdrive, in 1979, and it was originally called Jamaica. And you can see, if you hear the Christina, it's Christina, so it would be Jamaica. So it follows the exact same melody of the original, which I think you're going to play, but I think, shall we play it right now so people get an idea of what we're talking about here?
Yeah, and then I just looked up on Wikipedia the Bachman Turner Overdrive song, and that's credited to Jim Valance.
Well, then maybe he wrote the original for Bachman Turner Overdrive, and then Rick Springfield, obviously writing new lyrics, and took half of the credit, and that's how they.
So I guess it's. So I'm not as. I was worried that this was going to be written by Randy Bachman and Fred Turner, and it was going to be some plagiarism. But I guess if Jim Valance wrote Jamaica, and then Rick just wrote some different lyrics, I guess it's okay.
I guess it's okay. I mean, look, they all figured it out, and it's all out right there for people to for people to see. But you know, ultimately, what happened is they took an okay song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did, and made it better.
I think they made it better.
It is better.
I think they made it both in terms of lyrically, and I think in the production and the performance of it.
Okay, so this is from 1979. This is BTO. This is Jamaica. If you've never heard it, you're gonna flip. Guitar sounds familiar. That's Jamaica, and Christina is a better song, because when you hear that, you know, you just know, because this has a lot more instrumental before it gets to, like, Rick has words, and then it, you know what I mean? His lyrics start sooner on Christina than the lyrics start on Jamaica.
But it's
not tainted for me now, now that I know Jim Valance wrote Jamaica, and obviously I did my research right in the moment, people.
Yeah, that's okay. That's all right. Look, it's a great song.
Anyway, it's a great song.
And also that keyboard part in the chorus, you know, that kind of glittery belly type of keyboard part that's happening. It's interesting because if you listen to Bryan Adams' song, I'm Ready, it has that same type of feel. And I'm Ready, if I'm not mistaken, actually had Jim Valance as a part of the writer. So that's where, once again, all this incestuous type of stuff,
all coming
not
together.
Just in the writing, but the actual production and the things that you hear and the mix and match and the similarities that you hear between songs and bands that came out. But this is just a great song. I remember seeing him play this. I saw him at the Coach House, like, back in 1992-ish or something like that. And it's great live, like you said, the great guitars that they have. It's just a really feel good song. So I would have no problem this kicking off the album either, or being much higher up.
I could also hear, 80s Bryan Adams singing Christina also.
Yep.
I think he could do a great job at it too, but he didn't get a chance to. Jim took it to Rick. Okay, next song, track 5 on the album. The song is called Tonight. Here we go. Love the intro.
Patty's working, but she's watching the clock.
Got the hand claps.
She's in the back room counting stock. And down in a warehouse out by the dock, Jesse's lifting crates and breaking rock. But when the whistle blows to end the daily fight, and the working forces turn out the light, Jesse takes that little girl and he holds her tight. As the day fades away, he says, "Where are all that matters tonight? Tonight.
I just love a song about a girl and a guy, and he's doing this and she's doing that, and then when their regular day is done, they're gonna get together, and the weekend's gonna start, whatever's gonna happen. But I just love songs like this. It's like, you know, Bon Jovi's made a career of writing sure. songs like this. But what's your take on this one?
So one of the reasons why I love this song is that it takes what could be really kind of predictable and blah type of lyrics. And I'm interested to get your opinion because I know how sometimes it takes you out of a song. I was even listening to I think the last podcast I heard was, you know, the 2020 Hall of Fame Hall of Fame thing. And I think at some point you mentioned how when you can predict the next line of a song.
Yes, that's troublesome. Like yeah.
It. And so, I mean, look, Pat, we're facing a song right here that, if I'm not mistaken, at one point goes through night, tight, right, lights, right. And it goes through that.
Yes,
and
it does. And yet,
because the melody is so cool, it works for some reason.
And
it
I'm
might
okay.
not work. If you two was doing this, it might not
right,
work.
Right, but I'm okay with it in this song.
Exactly. So that's what I love about this song. And I think there are some glimpses in this song of some stuff that you see later in Rick Springfield's catalog. So really, really good. The lead claps, I think you mentioned the lead claps. Anytime you can get actual claps in there that don't distract or seem like they fit and should be there, I think that's always a
like the cars would do on their debut album, exactly. Stuff like that.
And there's a breakdown later in the song with this incredible high doo-wop type of backing vocal that is gorgeous. I don't know if it's him or somebody else doing it, but it's really, really cool, and a whole other part of the song that comes.
Yeah, and I will give a shout out. Let me see. I'm looking right. Yeah, backing vocals were Tom Kelly, Richard Page from Mr. Mister, and a guy named Tommy Funderburk, whose name is all over so many albums back in the day. I would see his name all the time because it's such a, you know, odd or different right. last name. You can't forget it. So and Tim Pierce on guitar and Mike Baird on drums. So just great. So now we go to side. No, this is still side one, I think. Yeah, I think it ends side one. It's a cover song, Black is Black. And this album, there's a record label I think they're out of England called Rock Candy Records, and they've re-released all of Rick's albums from Working Class Dog through Rock of Life, but they haven't released this one yet, remastered with all, you know, the bells and whistles. And for some reason, I feel like it's because maybe they can't get the rights to this one song, Black is Black. That might be what the holdup is. I don't know.
You think?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. But what do we play first? Do we play the original or do we play Rick's cover?
Yeah, I think you play Rick's cover. I mean, that's...
We play Rick's cover first and then we'll hear a little bit of the original. Okay. The song is Black is Black.
I want my baby back. It's gray since she went away. Oh, what can I do? 'Cause I'm feeling blue. If I had my way, she'd be here today. But she's going time.
right, Black is Black. I remember when I when the album came to this song for the first time, I was like, oh yeah, I know this song. Yeah, I've heard this before.
And really?
I had heard this cover before.
Oh, I had never heard
it. You had never heard it.
And as far as I was concerned, I never wanted to hear it again. This is, without a doubt, this is the stinkeroo here, okay, of the album, okay? When you said that they can't get the rights and so they haven't reissued it, it's fine. Don't even worry about reissuing with this. Take this one off of the album.
Take it off, okay.
It's addition by subtraction here. This is no, absolutely not. It doesn't matter. You can play the covers. You can play the original versions and all that kind of stuff. It still doesn't get any better.
You don't like the original song either. You just don't like the song.
No, I don't like the song. Yeah, it's.
Do you like Rick's version is faster than the original?
It doesn't matter. I don't like it at all. I mean, you're about to play the original.
I'm going to play the original.
It's this weird like Austin Powers 60-ish type thing going on here. You'll know what I'm talking about.
Band is Las Bravas, if I'm saying it right, or Las Bravos.
It seems to be a Spanish band. I mean, it's covered by a bunch of different people.
Yeah, but this is the original.
Yep.
Okay, here we go. A little slower, a little definitely 60s sounding.
Black is black. I want my baby back. It's gray, it's gray.
I do like the production on this original one. There's some cool 60s keyboard and the drums sound good. Now let me ask you this. Is it the music or the lyrics or is it everything? Is it the lyrics you don't like?
Sorry, Pat, I lost you there. You back?
That's okay. I was asking you is it the music or the lyrics that you hate more or do you just not like anything about it?
I don't like anything about it.
Nothing about it at all.
I don't like the lyrics. I don't like the melody. I don't like the production. I don't like anything about it. And, I'm wondering on a song like this, how this comes to be. Because there's always some story where they shared managers or I lived next door to the guy or I grew up singing this song at camp or whatever it ends up being. I'm fascinated to find out how this came to be. You mentioned other covers. There was a French vocal trio called La Belle Époque. And back in 1976, evidently, this song went to number 2 in the UK and number 1 in Australia. So I'm wondering if it was something that came on his radar in Australia. It was much more disco-y dance type of feel thing. But I'm amazed and fascinated that it happened, but I'm also curious as to why he ever thought that this would be good and why he ultimately included it.
And also there's 12 songs in the album, so you could have easily just had 11 songs on the album. I mean, I don't hate it, but I'm just saying if there's no need for a cover.
Right, exactly. Let me look. And I know that you're personal friends with Rick, and so you're pulling your punches here and everything, and I understand.
Oh, this brings me. I wanted to say this when we were talking about Christina and Jamaica. You know, Rick's. I've been in the room with Rick, and I've been in the room with Randy Bachman, and it just frustrates me that I didn't know about this Jamaica Christina thing because I definitely would have asked both of them about it.
And there's not a lot online to find out about how it all came to be. And there's certainly not a lot online to find out how the hell Black is Black came to be.
No.
When it comes to the inclusion.
And that could have been Keith Olsen. Maybe he loved that song. He was just like, hey, do this.
Who knows?
All right. Now we're moving to side 2 of the record. Now, from just what's happened so far, you don't like 2 of the songs on side 1. Well, I mean, you don't like one of them.
I definitely don't like Black is Black. I'm okay with Calling All Girls. Okay. I just don't like the verse.
Okay. So I think you're probably going to, I'm just speculating, you're probably going to like side 2 of the album better than side 1. I don't know. We'll find out. Okay. Let's kick it off with the first single on the album. This is Don't Talk to Strangers.
When you were just a young
young girl and still in school. How come you never learned the golden rule? Don't talk to strange men, don't be a fool. I'm hearing stories, I don't think that's cool. Why don't you tell me someone is loving you? Cause you're my girl, some say it's no longer true. You're seeing some slick continental dude. I'm begging you, please don't talk to strangers. Baby, don't you go. Don't talk to strangers. You know he'll only use you. Don't talk, don't talk, don't talk. Don't talk, don't talk to him. Nobody talk.
Let me ask you something, Alexi. Are you a slick continental dude?
I was just about to say, when I heard the lyric Continental Dude, I was so curious as to what that ultimately meant
right.
for Rick or anything. Or was it once a piece of jargon that I was missing
yeah.
in my little, you know, suburban bubble young slurpy type of existence?
Yeah, because I've never heard it either.
Yes, I didn't know what the hell he was talking about like there. But look, this is.
But at the same time, you know what he's talking about.
Yes.
You don't
yes.
know that term, but yet you know exactly the kind of guy he's talking about.
It was such a creative type of word to use. But and even though I hadn't heard it before, I still did, I guess, know what he was talking about. But this is a perfect gem of an 80s beautiful song, mm-hmm. tailor-made for Solid Gold and
right, exactly.
Casey Kasem and everything. And obviously really, really keyboard heavy and dependent on that keyboard as opposed to other ones that are much more guitar oriented. And you got the feeling that this one was manufactured mm-hmm. and written in a very, and I'm going to say calculated, but that's not a bad thing. I mean,
no.
Like this is a perfect type of pop song.
And it went to number two.
Yes, on
the,
it did.
And it, what kept it off the charts were a couple of guys named Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder.
Not too shabby.
And
too
shabby. Even though I'm not that big a fan of Ebony and Ivory, it's hard to knock those two heavyweights off the chart, no matter what kind of song you got.
And this is also an example where a song takes on new and sometimes even completely different meaning, because if you read up about this song, evidently it's about his girlfriend, and I guess then our eventual wife, screwing around on him
nice.
Because he was screwing around.
Well, all right.
So it was this incredibly insecure type of reaction mm-hmm. and authoritative type of, don't do what I do, yeah. but do what I say type of things. And then it became a much more anthemic type of thing for children and you know, a cautionary and warning. Type
exactly.
Of
yeah. And it's and those two, Rick and his wife, are still together. So more power to them for being able to work out whatever differences and obstacles they've had in their marriage and to stay together, because that's not easy, you know, when you're Rick Springfield.
Yeah, I mean, I always wonder what it would be like to have the world know that you are part of a song, or you know, either the focus of the song, or you know, whether it's good or bad, how that ultimately plays out and manifests in
exactly.
somebody's life, especially if it's a huge, huge song and everybody knows the backstory and talks about it. It can't be, I don't know if it's easy or not.
Yeah.
Maybe you just forget about it anyway.
All right. We are on side two of Success Hasn't Spoiled Me Yet. Rick Springfield's sixth album, but we call it his second album because we're taking liberties. This is track number two. And for me, this is one of my favorite songs on the album for sure. Let's
because?
Listen. I just love the sentiment. I love Rick Springfield, good looking Rick Springfield, singing about being shy when it comes to girls. When this song, it has to be bullshit. You know what I mean? He didn't have any trouble getting girls. But
there could have been a time where even Rick Springfield had trouble doing it. And so his vulnerability in that moment mm-hmm. comes through. And that's appealing to
so
humans.
Even though I was 18 when this song came out, I would listen to it as if I was like a 13 or 14 year old kid. And it would take me right back to a time when maybe you were at the dance and you were scared to ask the girl to dance or whatever it was. And I just love it. And I love the music. Unless... play it, and then we'll talk to Alexi. Here we go.
Well, I'm sick of hanging out on the street every Saturday night with the boys.
Listening to the radios, big, big, we crank it just to hear the noise. Yeah, we talk about the girls, 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 and we talk, talk, talk all night. A show of all Romeos and Casanovas, but we can't seem to get it right. Seems I'm making it harder and harder, while everybody else is doing well. I get confused by their bodies, I get tangled in their curls. How do you talk to girls? How do you talk to girls? What's a poor boy to do? Tell me, how do you talk to girls? How do you talk to girls?
Love the guitar too. I don't know what you call that type of a guitar when it's just like, I don't know. I don't know technical talk on guitars, but I just love, I just love the guitar on that.
It's a great song. It's a great song. That whole calypso feel in the verse.
Yes.
I love it. I love that. Again, the backing vocals are so cool. The innocence, or the, I guess the immaturity that you would think would kind of pull you out of it.
Right.
It still works for Rick.
Yeah, pulls me into it. It works the opposite for me.
But you know how when sometimes people are singing songs that seem too either mature or immature for who they are?
Yes.
And it's not as if he was a teenager when he was singing this thing.
No.
But a lot of his songs, as you know, talk about a time gone by, and especially, you know, his friends and those things that they got up to. And so they are universal problems, even if he's, you know, just projecting it into his teenage type of self, and putting it out there. But it doesn't sound teeny bopperish or anything.
No. And
very cool.
What's the one lyric that we didn't get to? Am I stupid or misunderstood? I'd say something clever if I only could. We're only 10 feet apart, but it seems like worlds. How do you talk to girls? Just love it. Just
tangled up in their curls and all.
Tangled
that
up in their curl, all of it. Love it. All right, track 9 is Still Crazy for You. Here we go.
You know my feelings run deep. You've got me calling your name in my sleep. We've held each other while we cried through the night. I fell victim to a parallax view. I sensed a change, but I swore it was you. I shied away when you needed me most. Didn't see what I was doing. Now I'm left destitute. I never knew how lost I could be till the day. My panorama's dark, my sight's been stripped away. I can't seem to bridge this break between us two. Don't you know I need you back now, baby? Can't you see I'm still crazy for you?
All right, that's the longest song on the album, just a little under 4 minutes, and it's written by an outside writer, Charles Sanford, who also plays guitar on the album, some of the guitars, with Tim Pierce. What are your thoughts on that one?
Love it. I love this song. You know, you mentioned the guitars, and you know, Tim Pierce, actually, for people, just a great guitarist. The solo in John Waite's Change, guitars actually on Runaway from Bon Jovi. Worked with Bon Jovi. Worked on like Crowded House's Don't Dream It's Over. Michael Jackson's Black and White. You can actually go on YouTube, and he's got a wonderful YouTube channel where he goes through and actually plays some of the, tells you how he played some of these solos and stuff like that. It's really, really interesting to see him. And the guitars all over, to be quite honest, all of Rick Springfield's albums are wonderful. Not just him playing it, but others that he brings in. And
right. He
recognizes that it just makes it that much better when he brings in other people that are really, really good. And here, you know, here's an example. The guitars are great. You mentioned Charles. I think at times they call him Chaz.
Chaz, yes. That's songwriting credit-wise, that's what I would see most often was Chaz Sanford.
So, I mean, he co-wrote Missing You from John Waite and Talk to Me from Stevie Nicks and these types of things.
Yeah.
So the collaboration, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. In this case, I think he had all guns blazing. Great, great writing, great production, great great guitars and a great performance. And it's not really a ballad, but you can see people kind of swaying back and forth right. to it as he's singing it. But it's not a complete just stark type of ballad. It's still got groove, and it's still got, you know, something to tap your foot to.
And we're going to move on to another song there's three songs with girl in the title: Calling All Girls, How Do You Talk to Girls, and now we're moving on to American Girl. It's not the Tom Petty song. This is a Rick original. Here we go. Track 10. And again, the guitar at the beginning of the song is amazing.
You can see her walking down on the city street. The American girl. She's got the passion in her eyes. She's got the blush on her cheeks. The American girl. I love to watch her move. Her body sways. She whispers, then she laughs. Did you hear what she said? I wanna know if she's talking about me. Doing things her daddy can't see. The American girl out in the dark. She's looking for love. Oh, oh. The American girl. She breaks hearts. But that's not enough.
All right. That is, I love the background vocals on that. Big, powerful, you know, everyone singing at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, the guitars, like you mentioned, are great.
So great.
The whole Americana thing from Rick Springfield is a thread that goes through a lot of his albums, mm-hmm. a lot of his songs. And obviously that whole discovery coming from a different country and what lives up to and what doesn't live up to it. And the girl part of it that always seems to be there. But, you know, these stories that he tells through his eyes, seeing America and seeing what America is for the first time. I love all that. I mean, this is almost in a strange way. You could see others doing this song and making it their own. But, you know, if this had appeared on the second side of, you know, John Cougar's, you know, American Fool or whatever.
Yes.
You know, something like that. It would have been done differently, but it still would have worked. It's that type of, it paints a picture, right?
Yep.
And everybody can relate to it. And certainly when you're at a, you know, sitting on the grass of a amphitheater in the middle of a early 80s summer with the sights and the sounds and the smell, that resonates through that crowd in suburbia in the United States.
It's so funny. Rick Springfield to me seems so American that I often forget that he's from Australia. He just doesn't.
We've adopted him.
Yeah, we've adopted him, and he's adopted us. And I want to go back to Tim Pierce too. When social distancing is over, he would be a great guest to have on.
Oh, yes.
Because we could play so many cool songs, and maybe he would play in studio for us too. Who knows?
You got to do it.
I'm going to look for him. He probably still lives out here, right?
I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll look into it for sure.
Now in your world of Zoom.
Oh yeah, because it's working out so stellar. Just so people know, we've stopped down twice to restart a meeting up. So, and I'm leaving this in just so you know. You won't know until I say it right here, because it'll be so seamlessly edited. But but it's working. And again, I'm glad you're doing this with me.
No, it's working. It's fine.
Okay, track 11. We're almost done with the dozen. This song is called Just One Kiss. Keyboards, the drumming. This is one of my favorites too. What about you, Alexi?
Good God, really?
Yes, I love this one. This is where we fight.
No, this is wrong. This is another song that is wrong. This is a song that, no.
I love it.
Look, I mean, and we talked about writers, Tom Kelly, Billy Steinberg, you know.
Yes.
Incredible.
Those are the writers for this one, right?
True Colors, Like a Virgin, Eternal Flame, So Emotional. Great writers, but doesn't mean that just because you have great writers, it's going to be a good song in everybody's hands. And so this is a situation where, I mean, first off, this is a song that should be on a soundtrack, a Grease soundtrack or something like that, or give it to somebody else. Like, you know, look, I love Air Supply, mm-hmm. but this is a song that Air Supply should have done. A little more up-tempo than normal stuff, okay. but it would have been something that they, in their hands, it would have been much better.
So you don't like it for Rick, but you like the song, but not for Rick?
Yes, I like the song, but okay. not for Rick. It was a poor choice of song for him to record. It's not that, you know, he did a bad job at it, mm-hmm. or that, but it's just when you're picking the songs that you didn't write.
Right.
You have the world to pick. I mean,
well, that's true.
You want, so you better pick wisely. And if this is what you're going to come up with, then I got to take you to task, Rick. Just the way it's going to go. All right.
I'm trying to. I don't have the credits in front of me, but it seems like subsequent albums. There isn't really covers, and I don't know what if there's outside writers. Let me see. Yeah, a little bit, but I don't know that he really covers any songs after this album so much.
And once again, you always wonder what the situation was and what type of even pressure. I mean, there are artists that are pressured and or give and take. There's a back and forth in the negotiation. All right, I'll do this song, but then you got to let me do this.
Right.
Or you never know why things actually happen. Or does the artist just feel, hey, this is a great song and I really like the way that we recorded it and I want to include it. And if that's the case, then you know, Rick needed somebody else to tap him on the shoulder and say, hey, not so much on this one.
And the label probably wanted to ride the success of Working Class Dog so much that they were willing. They probably were like, do this cover and maybe try this. And they had a lot at stake too, I guess.
It is, but I mean, it's kind of buried at the end of the album.
Yes.
And it goes back to sequencing there. So.
And so now the album closes out, with April 24th, 1981, which is, the date that Rick's dad left the planet. He passed. Mm-hmm. And this is a theme that Rick goes to in a lot of songs after his dad passes away. He's, you know, lots of dad references throughout, which is fantastic because you just know how much his dad meant to him and that he was a true role model for his son. And he was supportive of his son's choices. And that's a big thing when you're a kid, knowing that your parents are in your corner and supporting you at whatever you decide to do, even if it's something crazy, like I want to be in a band, or maybe I want to be a professional soccer player, or I want to try stand-up comedy. I mean, you need to have your folks in your corner big time so that you can succeed. So what do you think about now? And this is almost, it's a song, but it's almost a coda, kind of, because it's a minute, 33 seconds, more of a tribute to his dad. And let's hear it, and then I'll get your thoughts. Here we go. April 24th, 1981. That was pretty much it in its entirety. You got to hear all the lyrics and again, more of a tribute and a coda, you know, for his dad. So what do you think of this?
So when I heard it, I didn't know what it was about. Like I said, I was 11, 12 years old.
I probably didn't either.
I heard it. So I didn't know the backstory, and we certainly weren't living in the internet age, so I could readily find out what the hell it was about.
Right.
And like you said, it's since become the companion piece to my father's chair. Yeah. and live when they do that together, he puts them both together. And you know, the emotion of it and the way that it does finish the album, I think it's a perfect ending to an album. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a kind of a coda, but it's so ethereal and obviously huge synth type of background, which makes it heavenly and you know, almost churchy in a really good way. And so it was, you know, it even though I didn't know what it was about, and I would have to just kind of think about different things, I recognized that there was a solemn type of thing happening here, whatever the hell he was talking about in this moment. I think it's just a great way to finish up an album like that, and to kind of be that finishing bookend of an album.
And it still gets him when he sings this with my father's chair. You can see it on his face. He's not, mm-hmm. He's still grieving. It feels like he's still, I don't want to say hasn't let it go, because that sounds dismissive, but he still deeply feels connected to singing those two songs back to back. And obviously they're still in the set list, and he's,
yeah. So and I think he has, unlike a lot of people out there and a lot of us, we don't have that platform with which to celebrate with a mass of people.
Right.
Where they can't go anywhere, but
yeah,
just to celebrate with them and honor somebody that obviously is very, very important to him. But he also, he did it in a way that, you know, the melody of it is beautiful. And
yes.
So even if it had been about, you know, a dog or whatever, or a girl or something like
right.
that, it still would have resonated. It was still good. And so that's the best part. If you're doing this type of tribute, if you can make it also a really good song, then you're cooking.
Yeah. So it's perfect placement of the album. If this was anywhere else, it would just seem very odd. Even if it was at the end of side one, it would seem odd, because then on your CD, it would have been right in the middle. It just wouldn't have been good. So this is perfect
yeah, it
placement.
It might have been a hidden track later on.
Yes, exactly. It could have been a hidden track too. All right, so that's the 12 songs. Now I'm going to ask you this, and I didn't ask you this prior because I want you to do it right here in the moment.
Okay.
Can you tell me your top three favorites from this album? Your top
from
three
this album,
songs.
Yes. Christina, I Get Excited, and I'm going to go Don't Talk to Strangers.
All right.
Because of the beautiful pop craftsmanship of that song.
And I too agree with Christina, but then for me, I go with How Do You Talk to Girls and Just One Kiss.
Oh, okay.
those are my three that I love. Like I probably have those in like my treadmill playlist, because they're just like, they just move.
I don't understand the Just One Kiss thing. I mean,
I know, I just love it.
It's just like a bopping back and forth. I picture you just doing that 80s bop back and forth. You
know, I have a big headband on.
Whatever. Yeah, your Reeboks on.
Yeah. And the headband is, it's like it's terry cloth.
It's right, exactly.
Giant. Yeah, I get it. I understand. It's so funny. It's just when you grow up in, you know, I was so locked in the 80s. I mean, even though, you know, I'm so locked into the 80s music still. It's really a great decade, and it's really hard to.
But I feel like you're trying to apologize for it. I don't apologize it. You shouldn't apologize for it.
I'm not apologizing for it. It's my favorite music.
I think it married the best of the actual audio part with the best of the actual video part.
Yeah, I'm an MTV kid. Yeah.
I mean, it was just, and it was so much a part of our life, and people, now we're going to sound old, but the kids nowadays, they have music in their life.
Yeah, but in a different
it
way.
It doesn't, you know, they don't digest it in the same way. Mm-mm. It doesn't resonate in the same way. And, you know, that time is gone, but we are still a generation that was so heavily influenced by it. And I'll die on the 80s hill when it comes to music. No problem.
Yeah. Like if you heard a Prince song on the radio and you love that song, you had to save up your money and and go buy the album if you wanted to hear the rest of the music. Now, Spotify, click it on, hear, you know, hear whatever you want. It's different. It's a different, definitely a different way music is serviced to our hearts and heads and ears, for sure. But yeah, I always say the 80s. Look, you could turn on the radio and you would hear Prince and Michael Jackson side by side with U2, Bruce Springsteen, Madonna, Cyndi Lauper. I mean, I felt like it was, like some people just go, 80s music. I felt like it was such an eclectic decade.
Oh, I agree with you. And the quality sometimes gets bypassed or dismissed because of the over-the-top
production sometimes.
The production, the aesthetic of the time.
The big hair.
We joke about and all that, but incredible musicians, incredible writers, and incredible performers. And like you said, so many different types. There was something for everybody. And I think that we listened to it with, I think we were much more receptive to a whole lot more back then. You know, we weren't as
you gave
as,
the whole album a chance.
Yeah. Well, he definitely did that.
Yes,
he definitely did.
And you would play it. You would play it until you knew every single word of every single song.
Yeah,
that's
you'd make up the words. If you didn't know what they were saying, you'd make up the words.
Even if I buy, if I hear a new song and there's a new artist I like, I still don't give that new music the attention that I gave that music when I was a teenager. You know what I mean? Like it takes, it would take a long time for me to listen to every single song and learn the lyrics and be able to, you know what I'm saying? There's a few bands I have like that, but yeah, it's different.
Well, we're not going back to that anytime soon.
No, we're not.
Soon,
we're so not going
it's,
back.
It's all right. But that's why we have you and this wonderful platform to,
thank you very much. Now, Alexi, and you have are you doing the State of the Union podcast while you're in quarantine?
I am. I continue to work with Fox Sports over there, and as I said, Fox are not like it was a couple of months ago.
Right.
But you know, hopefully, we're going to get back to some form of sports going forward, and I'll continue to talk and scream and yell about soccer. I can still do the State of the Union podcast that you can find every week. We have a weekly show on FS1 over on Fox called Indoor Soccer, which is a weekly magazine soccer show. We continue to do all sorts of different digital content that's getting thrown out there right now, as you can imagine. Right now, we're all working from our homes. And as challenging and as at times difficult as it may be, I'm still in an incredibly privileged and fortunate position relative to most people out there. And so I remind myself that and my kids and my family about that when we have our moments of meltdown and complaining.
Yes,
and whining.
And we do that here too. We acknowledge that we are lucky and luckier than some and most. Yep. So, stay healthy, stay safe. Are you still going out for a run every day?
I still run every day. I run through the streets. Now I look like a wild man with the hair. I run at night, so I am.
It's cooler.
Patrolling. It's cooler. There's less people. I am patrolling the streets of Los Angeles, like a caped crusader or a masked crusader.
So, are you wearing a mask when you're running?
I am. I bring it with me out of respect for others. I don't come across a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if I do come across anybody, and I'm running through kind of alleyways and different places, so there's not a whole lot of people. But if I do come in contact or even close to people out of respect, I will put it up well ahead of time so that I'm running through and doing this thing. I mean, look, if this is the worst thing in life that we have to do right now,
yeah,
to keep ourselves and others safe,
it's a good life.
We can do it. We can fight about other things going forward, but this is one of them where I'm fine. And I got an American flag one that's pretty awesome. So
that's cool.
From a fashion perspective, you see me coming.
Pilar and I were walking yesterday, and I keep the mask on all the time. She takes it off when there's no one around, and then we see someone up in the distance, she puts it back on. But it was really hot yesterday, and she says to me, she goes, "Aren't you hot behind that mask?" And I said, "Some would say so." And the biggest laugh from her, like she could not stop laughing. She just was like, that really caught her by surprise because I'm ugly.
I mean, that's like, I get it. But in a sense, that's incredibly sweet and loving that you can still make her laugh.
Yeah. It's fun.
I mean,
there's nothing better than making Pilar laugh for sure. Okay, so we do need a playout song, but we've played every song on this album, but here's what I've chosen. And okay. This is good, too, since we both put Christina in our top three. I'm going to play Christina from Rick's album that came out in 2019 called Orchestrating My Life. This is where Rick took some of his past recordings and put orchestration to them. Sometimes it was a little light for me. There wasn't he didn't go for it enough, but I feel like with Christina, he did go all out and it kicks off that album. So Alexi, thank you so much for being here. I can't wait till we can record in person and tackle some Bon Jovi and, or whatever you want to do or whatever you want to talk about. And my best to you and your family. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me each and every time. It's a real a pleasure and a privilege. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And here is Christina from Orchestrating My Life 2019.